Wildfires in the West leave a trail of destruction.
You come to the downtown and there's an entire stretch that looks like it's just been bombed.
Plus, Harvard University will be back in court tomorrow in an affirmative action case that could change college admissions.
The case is, on its surface, about race, but it's really about the different privileges and advantages that all different categories of applicants might get in the process. And it really shows that this isn't just pure merit as the deciding factor in who gets in.
And why our columnist says Apple's annual reveal was less than hoped for. It's Tuesday, September 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Wildfires in Northern California and Oregon are being fueled by dangerous winds and low humidity. Millions of acres have been burned and thousands of people have been displaced from their homes. At least 35 people have been killed. Our reporter Zusha Ellenson visited two small towns in Oregon reeling from the devastation.
So when you drive into the small city of Talent, which has a population of about 6,000, you come to the downtown and there's an entire stretch that looks like it's just been bombed. It's just flattened rubble, smoking ruins of businesses. You drive a little further and you find whole neighborhoods just gone. You see sort of the skeletons of cars that were burned. You see blackened trees. You see small bits of remains from houses. It's a small town, and the two small towns together lost about 600 homes and 100 businesses.
Zusha says the destruction in this small town caught many there by surprise.
What's interesting in talking to people in Oregon is this little town of Talent, you know, it's a farming town. You have orchards, you have farms, and it's green and lush. And while that's no guard against fires, the people here at least thought it was different than California, you know, where you have your golden brown hills and all the dryness. So a lot of people here were quite shocked by what has happened here. They would watch the fires in California and say, well, that'll never happen here. It's so green. We have all these trees. And a lot of people, when they left their homes in Talent, had no idea that they would get destroyed. It was complete shock for everyone.
The National Interagency Fire Center says the blazes are part of a wider outbreak that scorched more than 4.6 million acres in 10 states. We report exclusively that federal prosecutors are launching a criminal investigation into former National Security Advisor John Bolton. They're looking into whether he mishandled classified information in connection with his recent book about his time in the Trump administration. Our Aruna Vishwanatha, who covers the Justice Department, says it marks an escalation of the administration's battle with Bolton after its civil suit to block the book's publication failed earlier this year.
In the sense of this civil proceeding progressing into a criminal investigation, it's not necessarily the most surprising thing, because while the district judge that's overseeing the civil lawsuit didn't give the government a total block on the publication of the book, he did side with the government and say at one point earlier this year that he did think Mr. Bolton had violated his employment contracts and had potentially opened himself up to criminal exposure. So in that sense, it's not necessarily surprising.
Prosecutors have issued grand jury subpoenas to the publisher and agent for the book, according to people familiar with the matter. Bolton's attorney said he's aware of the subpoenas and that Bolton did not act improperly. The city of Louisville, Kentucky, will pay a $12 million settlement to the family of Breonna Taylor. The 26-year-old black woman was killed by police during a raid on her apartment with a no-knock warrant in March. The settlement also requires the city to implement police reforms, including a mandate for supervisors to sign off on search warrants. Taylor's death has sparked months of protests in the city and become part of a national conversation about racial justice. The FBI has opened an investigation into her death over potential civil rights violations. Coming up after the break, we'll look at Harvard's closely watched admissions discrimination case and its implications for higher education. Tomorrow, a federal appeals court will hear oral arguments in the years-long case challenging Harvard University's admissions policies. The outcome of the case could change the higher education landscape when it comes to race and college admissions. Joining me now is our higher education reporter, Melissa Korn. Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, Melissa, this is going to be a very closely watched case. Remind us of the details here.
Yeah, so the oral arguments that we're hearing are kind of the next phase in this case that was first filed, this lawsuit first filed in 2014 by a group called Students for Fair Admissions. It's a nonprofit group whose members include Asian Americans who were denied admission to Harvard. And they allege that Harvard, in its undergraduate admissions, discriminates against Asian American applicants, that they do this thing called racial balancing, which is essentially like quotas. They say that the school held Asian American applicants to higher standards than it did applicants of other backgrounds. It says Harvard didn't really assess and try race-neutral alternatives to diversifying its class, and that it used race as a determinative factor rather than just kind of a plus or kind of something that gives someone a little bit of an edge. So there's a bunch of elements to this that are being alleged here. A judge in Boston ruled about a year ago in Harvard's favor, and the plaintiffs now have appealed this up to the First Circuit Court.
What have we learned about the admissions process at Harvard in the years this case has been unfolding?
Yeah, the case has been really illuminating. In court documents and in court testimony during the trial in fall of 2018, we got a really good sneak peek into how a very selective college crafts its class. So how the role that legacy plays, the role that connections to donors might play, how valuable it is to be a recruited athlete, and just how many recruited athletes get in if they apply to the school. The case is on its surface about race, but it's really about the different privileges and advantages that all different categories of applicants might get in the process. And it really shows that this isn't just pure merit as the deciding factor in who gets in.
How has Harvard responded to all of this?
So Harvard has defended itself vigorously against the lawsuit and said it does not discriminate, that it has tried other approaches to getting a diverse class, but it hasn't been as successful. They have said that race is not the determining factor for applicants, that academics, extracurriculars, recommendations, all those other things absolutely weigh in. But they recognize that they're a bit on the defensive here. This is a very, very public case. They pushed back against releasing some of the information publicly. They didn't want a lot of this material out there, right? Admissions is kind of this, people say it's a mix of art and science, and it's fairly secretive and fairly opaque. And all of a sudden now we're shedding light on this. So it's put them in a difficult position. Both they and the plaintiffs have indicated that this will likely be appealed up to the Supreme Court eventually, no matter what the outcome here.
Melissa, the U.S. Justice Department recently concluded that Yale discriminated against Asian American and white applicants. Tell us some more about that conclusion and whether the decision there could influence the Harvard trial.
Right. So the Department of Justice investigated Yale, saying that they thought there might be discrimination at the undergraduate admissions level there as well. There's no legal case there at this point. They were investigating, and they determined last month that Yale was discriminating against Asian American and white applicants, mainly in favor of Black and Hispanic applicants. Yale has said that's just not the case, that the Justice Department rushed its decision, didn't wait until they provided all the information. The Justice Department said that if Yale didn't change its policies, it would potentially file a lawsuit. That hasn't happened yet, so there isn't a legal case against Yale yet. There still absolutely could be, especially if this administration remains in the White House come the fall. But again, it's a sign that the Justice Department is very focused on challenging affirmative action as it stands right now.
Tell us more about that. This isn't the only challenge that the Trump administration has mounted to affirmative action policies.
Right. So in addition to looking into the situation at Yale, the administration has weighed in favor of the plaintiffs in the Harvard case. And they've, through public statements and investigations, have indicated that they are concerned that race plays too much of a role in admissions and that somebody else is losing out as colleges try to diversify themselves racially and ethnically.
So, Melissa, as you mentioned, this is a closely watched case, and it would have implications for other institutions besides Harvard.
Right. Whatever the outcome here will have really broad implications for how selective colleges, or how colleges, period, select their classes. Colleges say that it's valuable for them to have a lot of autonomy and tweak their admissions processes to best serve their institutions. They say that having a diverse class is important, is valuable, is a core of their educational mission, and that not allowing those schools that want to include race as a factor to diversify their student populations would really hurt them. But whatever the outcome, if affirmative action is struck down, that would very dramatically change what the student population of certain colleges looks like right now.
Wall Street Journal reporter Melissa Korn. Melissa, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And finally, Apple watchers will know that the company held its annual fall event today, minus the flashy stage show in Cupertino. Our personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen says those waiting for the company to release a new 5G iPhone will have to hold on a little longer.
So because of some supply chain issues related to coronavirus shutdowns in China, the iPhone is delayed. Today, they just focused on two new products, a new watch and some new iPads, and also a new bundle of services, but no mention whatsoever about a new iPhone or when we can expect it.
Nicole says the new Apple Watch Series 6 has some added health and fitness features, like a blood oxygen reader, which can be used by COVID-19 patients. But Nicole says the lack of a new iPhone wasn't the only thing that made this year's event a bit of a disappointment.
Well, first of all, it was virtual, so it was kind of like watching an hour-long infomercial. In terms of products, nothing super, super exciting. There is a new bundle of services. It's called Apple One. It includes things like Apple Music, iCloud storage, Apple TV, and Apple Arcade, the gaming service. And if you pay more, then there's also a new fitness service called Fitness Plus, which is like studio classes that you can take on your Apple Watch and iPhone. Otherwise, it's just a lot of incremental updates, and so I'd say 5 out of 10.
We'll have more details on the Apple reveal in the Wall Street Journal's Tech News Briefing podcast tomorrow morning, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.